identify yourself for the tape. And
thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Don Gerhardt. I'm the CEO of Life Science Alley. It's a trade association focused on Minnesota with about 520 member organizations. A number of those pieces of information are in the this Alley brochure book that we gave you. So you can reference that information. I need to give you just a quick overview of a whole number of things, but what we're going to be talking about is, first of all, a little bit about the organization I run, so that you know some of the tales of Life Science Alley back into the Medical Alley and the MinBio, the two organizations that were merged to form what we do. My role is to give you an overview of the industry in this state, the life sciences industry. And so that I'd love you to ask any kind of questions, and hopefully I can give you information that works for you. So I'm going to go like mad, but please do feel free to interrupt. But there'll be a small question time at the end. I think I can get the. I'm not. There we go. We'll start off with the alley rolling across. My organization that I run, this Life Science Alley, was originally created as a trade association called Medical Alley back in 1984. In 1991, Governor Perpich really was very active in creating MinBio. With all of his background work, he had done a lot for Medical Alley and used a lot of his influence to start the biotech association in the state. Those two organizations then merged on March 30th of 2006. March 1st, 2005. Then we changed the name of those two organizations to Life Science Alley. That name encompasses the biotech world, the medical technology world, a lot of research and development. So there are over 500 companies employing about 250,000 Minnesotans that belong to this association. Minnesota has an incredible opportunity and an incredible history, but the opportunity that's sitting in front of us in this life science, in this bioscience and life science world, is both wonderful. It is wonderful high-end jobs, but it also has some challenges in front of us in our ability to keep up with the competitive world. We're going to be talking about that today. So we do most of our work in Minnesota, the vast majority of it, but we are developing relational business and educational ties into the states around us and into the three Canadian provinces. You don't need to know some of this information that you've already know it, I'm sorry, but our broad-based economy that you look at here really has been wonderful to grow this life science technology base that we have. And I won't spend more time on that, but there are other neat things about the economy of Minnesota that have helped it grow. I won't talk about all of those Fortune 100 or 500 companies, but the one stuck down in the right-hand lower corner is extremely important. It's important for me to just help you understand how all of this does work together, and it's extremely important we keep it healthy. Northwest Airlines, I know very well the man that started the marketing and sales for Medtronic back in the early 50s. Medtronic would not exist if Northwest Airlines was not here. Medtronic could not have gotten efficiently to either Europe or to Japan, the two major early markets for what Medtronic did outside the United States, if Northwest wasn't there, wasn't healthy, wasn't flying direct flights. That's just an example of how it all fits together. How do we measure up against the rest of the world in this highly technical, high-technology-based economy? People say, well, what is the health of the citizens have to do? Healthy people are good workers. They show up for work, and they're typically smart and bright and up on in front of things. Best state to live in. We can recruit. It's very difficult to recruit a lot of people from other parts of the country and other parts of the world here. Once they're here, they stay. They just don't want to leave. K-12 education, extremely important part that we continue to keep very close track of. Other kind of surprises, the number 7 nationally software engineering population, that's a layover, a kind of a holdover from the exit of this from the state of a lot of the software and hardware companies about 15 to 20 years ago. A lot of people stayed, and a lot of that software engineering now helps us develop smart devices, smart implantables, or develop the really important IT services for the technology companies. Talked a little bit about the 520 FDA registered medical manufacturers in Minnesota. They employ about 50,000 people in the state, and they have an average pay rate of over $65,000. Each of those jobs, Dale Walston will be talking about it in just a little bit, but each of those jobs throws off another five jobs in the economy. That's extremely important for us to remember. Number of companies. Here's a surprise for you, but as we talk a little bit about some of the issues that are going on inside the state, there are the number of employees in companies of over 500 who employ more than 500 employees, they do not employ the majority of employees in this life science world. It is small companies. It's extremely important then for us to have a healthy large group of companies and a very healthy, very, very healthy, I'll call it ability to spin out and to create new and small companies. In Minnesota, 70% of the people that work in this life science business work in companies of under 125 employees. So they out-employ Medtronic and Boston Scientific and 3M, et cetera, in their medical technology and life science world. Just a quick one. Oop, we changed computers. This is a PowerBook, so we had a little bit blocked out here. As you know, Medtronic started in a garage 50 years ago. A Minnesota doctor asked Earl Bakken to help him out. Well, that from a startup in that garage, we had a picture of the garage. It's not there now. It now has an $11.3 billion sales, of which the majority of those sales come out of Minnesota. Extremely important for a small company to grow large. So you have to keep track of both the large and the small in this process. The impact of medical manufacturing in the state, the 10 largest out of those 520 companies, just the 10 largest produce about $18 billion in worldwide sales each year. As you take the other 500 approximately, that is an enormous number each year of sales and manufacturing and new buildings being constructed, et cetera, in the state. Situation for the region. The businesses are on the move. The four largest out of those 520 companies more than likely will grow 5,000 to 10,000 employees in the next 5 to 7 years. It's extremely important that we keep that in mind as we understand what they need, and what they need most of is people. And where do a lot of those people come? They have to come from our educational system, or the vast majority of them do. Funding needs to not stop at Minnesota's borders. We need to be able to draw funding from venture capital people and other investment sources from around the world, not just in Minnesota. Therefore, we have to have the right kind of profile. So what it comes down to, I won't go through these lists, but the thing I want to plant in your mind is that it comes down to technology, talent, and capital to nurture those small businesses and make sure the large businesses continue their work. So, for instance, as we talked about Medtronic via the Harvard Business Review just about 6 months ago, defined that 157 companies had spun out of Medtronic alone in its history. That's the kind of spin we need to keep making sure that we have. Some quick things about what's going on right now. This is a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but that oxen, the ox that is pulling what we think is a General Motors truck, is really where we are in this convergence of bioscience, the ox, and the hard science of med tech. And that's happening very quickly, and Minnesota has a wonderful opportunity for it. So I won't go through all of these. It used to be we were focused on implantable electromechanical devices, i.e. a pacer being put in you. Now, as we look into biologics, there are these at least these five other sciences that are extremely important that we have people in that field producing new brains and new ideas for our companies. Here's a real life example. A good friend of ours from Medtronic is in way deep in the process in a jointly researched project with University of Minnesota on studying bears. As bears hibernate, over those 4 months they hibernate, they only lose about 20% of their muscle mass, which is quite amazing. If we're down flat on our back for about 3.5 to 4 weeks, we'll lose about 25% of our muscle mass. At the same time, the bear can awake to full function in less than 15 seconds from the deep sleep. That has real impact on its potential, on what can be done for making certain parts of our body well. Well, that's the kind of research that needs to be commercialized after it's found to really work. It needs to be commercialized into the right kinds of products. That's what will help our state. So today, we see us focusing a lot on the diagnosis and treatment and monitoring. What you'll see in the future as we talk about these life science developments is a diagnostic that leads to treatment but also leads to a cure, which also changes the market very, 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 very quickly. So, again, this organization that I run, we gave you some of the details about it, and this is just a picture of the directory that we're putting out in the next month. But it's given to you to think about. Down in the bottom part of that picture is kind of a graphic of a pacemaker. The heart is in the middle, and the sprout of a green plant is going out the top. They are all coming together very quickly, and that's what we're here to talk to you about, the importance of it and the importance of keeping up with what is going on in the rest of the world so we can stay competitive. Member organizations, you've got the list, but the organizations that I rub elbows with almost every day are written down here. It takes that kind of a broad cross-section to make things work inside the state. So the signals we want to give you in the legislative agenda this year, you'll be getting the detailed agenda from us in just a couple of days. Education is extremely important. That research and commercialization support is extremely important. We ask you to do no harm to this wonderful industry that we've got going in the state and its potential, and then support for economic development because, again, as we build those jobs, five more spin out. And the new buildings, such as a Medtronic building, provides incredible amount of construction jobs. Having worked my way through college in construction, I understand that really well. That's it. That's all I have. That is the end of my talk. If there are any questions now, Mr. Chair, or you want
That's
to wait
fine. Yeah, sure. Anybody questions at this time? Senator Rosen, and then Senator
Thank
Rosen.
You, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Gerhart, I had two questions, if you don't mind. Back in 03 and 04, the governor had his governor's bioscience task force,
yes.
And Senator Kelly and I sat on that task force. And back then, one of the big issues was the angel investors or venture capital.
Yes.
Can you give me a better idea? Is that coming along? Have outside investors gained a little more confidence in our state and the direction that we're going?
It's a bifurcated answer. The outside investors have a very good bead on our state in advanced venture capital. So just, it was the most recent example was in the Star Tribune yesterday. Strong investment into very mature venture, second and third round investing. There is very little, because I've been operating in that world, trying to start an early stage venture fund. It's extremely important that we do incent the early stage investment in the life sciences, and we're not doing a very good job of it. It's extremely important that we, not just one thing is going to help it, but there are some efforts going on right now that hopefully that the Senate will respond to.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One more question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Gerhart, so that's where that do no harm comment comes in.
No, the comment. My response to you was focused on the, let me get back to the page, the support for economic development was involved in that.
And my other question, though, Mr. Gerhart, Mr. Chair, is the slide that on page 4 about the number of companies and it's over 3,000 that are, have employees less than 20. Are you tracking, as the association, are you tracking the growth and how many of those companies keep growing and the percent of growth that they are seeing?
We don't, Mr. Chair, Senator, we don't track the exact growth, but if you can wait till the presentation from Dale Wallstrom has some of that data in and can identify it better for you. We know for sure, the tail off, there is a definite tail off in the creation of new companies in their growth.
Senator Salzman.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Gebhardt, where is our workforce coming from in this area? Is it a homegrown workforce? Are we bringing people in? I know that some of us sat in with a meeting a few weeks ago regarding the math and sciences, and someone was here from 3M talking about that they can go around the world to find the expert, but when they come back here, they need a workforce. They need the people to really support them. Can you tell me maybe if you have any figures on, you know, are people coming here, or are we really growing our own workforce in this area?
I have to say yes to both, Senator, Mr. Chair.
Sure.
I've talked to four either senior vice president or CEOs of our four largest corporations, that exact question. The question I put to them is, why do you stay here? And they look at you right away and they say it's the people. So taking that, there is data to back that up, but the companies typically would like to find people here for their organizations that are both here, but they're spread around the world. So they do hire from around the world. So we are in competition with that, but they do hire thousands of people from here. I'll give you an example. Each year, each summer, the old Guidant, now Boston Scientific, had about 157 engineering students for the summer. Most of them were out of the University of Minnesota, some from other universities right in the Midwest. They hired about 95% of those. That's just a small example. But they do, the companies, the large companies and the small companies, hire from around the world.
Thank you very much.
Ms. Goy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Rosen, in her do no harm talk, picked a question to me. And I think Minnesota has been a pretty open state with regard to new biotechnology and bioscience research and development. If the Minnesota legislature was to pass a bill banning a GMO crop, would that do harm to Minnesota's environment for biosciences?
Mr. Chair, Senator, to my understanding, now we're now going into the crop expertise. I am not an expert. As I understand it, for in certain situations it could, in certain situations it may not. So I'm not dancing around the answer. I can find the data for that, and I can get back to you about it, but I don't have the answer.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman. Further questions? Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, following up again on Senator Rosen's question, you said something, we aren't doing a very good job. Did I hear you say that? We are not doing a very good job.
No, I didn't mean to say that. Did it come across that way? We are not doing a very good job of what? And then
venture capital?
For new things.
Oh, sorry. I was back on the education side. That's what I'm sorry. We are not doing a good job in early stage funding, startup funding. There is not very much available at all.
Is that in regards to the legislature, or business in
general?
No,
it was aggregate week. It was we think that there's responsibility for the end opportunity from the state legislature side to be assistive, but it also has to, business has to be part of it as well. So, for instance, quick example, Wisconsin, now North Dakota, South Dakota is going to do it. Iowa and Indiana have very interesting and positive investment credits as well as R&D credits that surpass ours. The things that are going on at the University of Wisconsin and in Indiana, and soon to be Fargo, North Dakota, believe it or not, are all spurred by the things they've been doing.
Chris. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Next, we'll hear from the BioBusiness Alliance of Minnesota, Dale Wallstrom, is the CEO, and welcome to the committee. And
I think
that's fine. We get some. Want to help with the handouts here, Matt? There's Mark.
Thank you.
Mr. Wallstrom, you can identify yourself for the tape, and you may proceed. And thanks for coming.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Dale Wallstrom. I am involved with an organization called the BioBusiness Alliance of Minnesota, and we are, in effect, the second phase of the Governor's Council on Biosciences that was kicked off a few years ago, and that Senator Rosen mentioned a moment ago. We are a nonprofit. Are having problems. I think, as Mr. Lenz alluded to, switching to a Mac from IBM is not working so well. So I'll work off of the hard copy. You have a hard copy in your hands. There we go to slide number two. We're a nonprofit, 501c3. We're, in effect, what we are is a collaboration between the academic sector, the private sector, and the government sector. We have members from state and local governments as well as the various academic institutions around the community. We are, all of us are involved in some way or another in our history. I should add that I just retired recently from Medtronic, where I was involved in biosciences for the last 30 years. Or 25 with Medtronic and 5 before that with another company. And all of us that are involved in this are involved because we have been exposed to what's happening on a global basis to the bioscience industry. We have a really strong commitment to that industry. And we have seen enough that we all share the same general impression that over the next 20 years, that the bioscience industry and bioscience capabilities that are developing will have the same impact on our world as the computer technology has had in the last 20 years. That 20 years from now, you look back and you'll be quite amazed at how our worlds have changed because of biology. So we function primarily off of volunteerism. we do that intentionally because we want to try to get a collaborative spirit established between the different institutions. Excuse me. And we have about 50,000 plus hours of volunteer time of people from various institutions around the state that are helping us to go forward. And then we'll switch back to the screen. When we talk about biobusiness, we've defined biobusiness in the following manner, and it includes these five categories. Medical devices, self-explanatory, R&D, and life sciences and I might add that these are all the NAICS codes from the federal census data. R&D and life sciences, core biology, and the commercialization of core biology. Pharmaceuticals fits in this category, agribio and bioindustrial, which is really renewable fuels, renewable energy. And then the medical diagnostics and lab equipment. And these are the five general groupings that I'm referring to when I talk about biobusiness. Okay, when you look at our jobs, our bioscience-based jobs, this is how they're split up within the state. If you look on the left, you'll notice in the United States, it's a general categorization of amount of employment per grouping. You can see in Minnesota, we're very heavily oriented towards medical devices. We are definitely a mega center in that area. As we look to the future, this industry is undergoing tremendous change, and it is for the following reason. This is recent data coming out of Harvard. And if you go back in time, all the way back to the 70s, you'll notice that there's been growth in sales in this industry sector, but it's only been since about 2003 that it's become profitable. And because of that, there's a tremendous amount of employment, or of money, rather, that's going into the development of these kinds of businesses. And just like the dot-com era, this profitability has been being defined by a few business models that were identified and are successful, and now others are beginning to copy them. So from a private sector perspective, this is driving tremendous level of interest. From a public sector, it's driving a lot of interest because Mr. Gerhardt referred to The bioscience, biotech arena is a catalyst for jobs, and these are higher-paying jobs. And this is the latest data coming out of Battelle Corporation, and the ratio, the multiplier effect in the bottom that was alluded to earlier is it is about 5.7 jobs that are created for every one job that's in the biotech or bioscience specific. So we know in our state we have somewhere around 30 to 34,000 jobs that are identified clearly as biotech. So we can expect that we would have somewhere, if we could reach out and look at all the engineering jobs, the marketing jobs, all the other associated jobs that go along with that, you can multiply that by about six, and that's approximately how many people are employed in those five categories that I showed you earlier. Okay. I mentioned to you that we all got involved because we weren't always encouraged about what we were experiencing when we went around the world in our respective functions and were exposed to what are happening in other places, because we saw a lot of what other communities are doing. So because there was a lot of, at the time that the governor kicked off his council, there was, I think, a lot of disagreement as to what the actual status was. I mean, in fact, you might recall that one day there was an article, I remember this, I don't remember the day, obviously, but there was in the newspaper, in the Minneapolis Star Tribune, there's a headline in the business section that said the bioscience train has left the track and Minnesota is not on it. And the very next day, there was an article or an op-ed that said, what are you talking about? We're number one in medical devices. We're number one in renewable fuels. And there was just a lot of disagreement. So we as a group said, all right, we sat down and thought this through and put a strategy in place. And that strategy has three arms. The first one is a statewide assessment, which I'm going to share a couple slides. And Jeremy Lenz just handed out a summary of that assessment. If you're welcome to take that with you and read it. I would not read it now, but because it's too detailed. We're now working on Destination 2025, which is a 20-year visioning process and strategic planning process, looking at how can we take and prepare ourselves to compete in this world of the biology that's emerging. And then third, we created what we call the Biobusiness Resource Network, which is a collaborative relationship between DEED, Department of Ag, the university systems, again, and the private sector, where we're looking at giving support to startup companies that want to move here, as well as we're leading major programs that are targeted at infrastructure or environment. And I'm going to jump now quickly and just give you a couple of slides to give you an idea of what we found when we went out to get the hard data. And the first slide is just a slide that demonstrates of the states that we looked at. And we looked at these states because they have a cross-section of the industries that we compete in. And this is using federal census data, which was the latest data was from 1997 to 2002. And now this year, or next year rather, there'll be another report coming out. And we'll update based on that new data. But in the time frame from 1997 to 2002, in those five categories that I showed you, we were the only state that actually lost jobs, which was a bit surprising to us. When we dug into it, we found that in 2002 was actually a low time for us because of the medical device industry. Since 2002, the medical device industry had a slowdown. Since 2002, we've turned that around. So from 1997 to about 2005, which is the last time we got pretty good data, we've gained probably 1,500 jobs. But you might have noticed in the graphs that some of the other states in this area have added thousands, 10, 15, 20,000. So our slope is not quite what we hope it needs, or what we need it needs to be. This is an index graph. It's just the line across it is a line around one. And the way this is looked at is if you were, as an example, if we're 10% of the workforce and we have 10% of the jobs, you divide the two together, you get a one. That's what you'd expect to see if you're average. So we broke that down and looked at how do we stack up against, say, California and North Carolina, other states, to get a sense of where we stand. And as you can see, we're significant in a better place than many, but in total we're about average in terms of the biobusiness categories. Looking specifically at the medical device sector, this is an area where we are a mega center that the initial graph showed you. One area of concern for us is that gold bar, which is the number of enterprises. It's relatively low for an industry that's so dependent on, or an economy that's so dependent on medical devices. But in general, we're in an excellent position. When we look at life sciences in the R&D category, which is, again, that core commercialization of biology, we are not a player in that arena. We are just a little bit bigger than Utah, with the recent job losses that have occurred at 3M. We are now a little bit smaller than Iowa in terms of the number of jobs that we have in that area. This is alarming to us for two reasons. Number one, this is the area of high growth. If you go back to that previous slide where it had all the job growth numbers on it, this is the area where those states are growing mostly. And number two, it's also the area that Don Garrett alluded to, which is the area of convergence, where you get, where you have the biotech world and the medical device world are coming together. So the states that we have looked at so far, they have an adequate capability in this R&D and life science commercialization sector, and an adequate capability in medical devices, are doing quite well. We're doing very well in medical devices, but we would predict it over time, if we don't beef up this area and gain a stronger capability, that we would start to see a negative trend in our device industry as well. That would be in a 5 to 10 year time frame. However, that's alarming to us. We looked at where the jobs are. They're spread all over the state. I would go into the data if you want more information. We can do it offline. At the end of the assessment, these are kind of the key takeaways that we walked away with and are working on today. One is to catalyze and support startup activity in the medical device arena, because we've lost that. And I think Mr. Gerhardt talked about that. We don't have that as much at early stage, or that microfunding, that small funding to keep the little companies alive long enough to get funded by VCs. We have the same need in the R&D and life science sector, and we also have a need there to create a culture and an infrastructure. When I say culture and infrastructure, there's some questions. I believe Senator Salzman asked a question about workforce. In this area, we need definite workforce development and capability enhancement, because we have a good we have good R&D, as was alluded to earlier, but the commercialization side is very weak. So that's the part in terms of workforce and commercial private sector support that needs help, and we're looking at that. And then thirdly, we identified that our sustainable renewable energy industry, as you all know, is based on corn, and it also is not going to be enough to satisfy our long-term needs. So we are working on in conjunction with the Sandia National Labs to develop a modeling capability that will allow us to begin to create a picture, an image of what that industry potential looks like if we combine the various solutions that are being developed. So that's the assessment that kind of tells us where we are and the key takeaways. The last couple of things I want to talk about briefly is the area of what we call Destination 2025, that and the Biobusiness Resource Network. Destination 2025, as I mentioned in my introduction, is a process we're going through where we're visioning, starting to create a 20-year vision and a strategic planning process. Now, we're not going to wait 20 years, obviously. What we're looking at is a 5-year, 10-year, 15- and 20-year plan. And our first draft of our first 5-year plan that we're looking at in the area of renewable fuels is targeted for release sometime in the July to September timeframe. Our medical device plan, and I should say human health plan, which includes devices, pharma, et cetera, is about 3 to 6 months after that for the preliminary draft. But it's intended to give us a roadmap to kind of help us define what do we have to do to move from where we are to where we need to be to make sure that we can compete long term. And it includes things like workforce development. It includes infrastructure for research. It includes all those things that are necessary to make sure that we have a strong, viable economy into the future. As I mentioned, we've divided this up. We have about 150 people across the state that are involved in this activity. We are focusing first on renewable energy. I mentioned the modeling initiative. We are, and then second, we will work on medical devices and pharma and biologics, which is the area of human health, and how those are evolving and coming together. Across the bottom of this page is are what we call the enabling technologies, and this is not a complete list. These are some of the key ones, but it's not a complete list. But these are those fundamental skills that we need at our workforce development level, our research level, our infrastructure level, et cetera, to be able to support the direction that these markets are moving. So over the so our plans will address not only the markets themselves, but also what is necessary to support their growth and their evolution. The last topic I wanted to just touch on briefly was, or sorry, the last of our three strategic arms is that of the Biobusiness Resource Network. And that is a virtual and actual organization, meaning that there's one person whose function as a coordinator. And what we're doing is working with the DEED, primarily with DEED, the University of Minnesota, and Life Science Alley, and Minnesota High Tech, in helping to draw the appropriate resources in to give support to individuals or to companies that are trying to expand here. So there's two parts to this activity. On the left side of this graph is what I'm referring to now. And there we've had, although we're not officially open for business on this yet, we've had 43 requests for support. They range from a spin-out coming out of the University Mayo partners, well, not the, yeah, the University Mayo relationship, all the way to a company from Australia that's looking to establish a U.S. market, two companies out of Japan that are trying to get into the U.S. market, six out of Scandinavia, a Korean company, and we have three other states that we're working with, or companies, rather, from three other states that are we're working with that are looking at locating here. One of those is already made the decision, and a couple more are close. And all of these companies and these organizations that we're working with are targeted either directly at bioscience, biotech, or the enabling technologies, one of the two. On the right side of this graph, excuse me, are some of the major programs that we're leading. And, you know, I'll give you a couple examples, but there's a distributed life science community. We mentioned acceleration, incubation. I know you're talking about UEL. In your discussions as part of that. There's a workforce development council that's in place and is way down the road. They're about a year and a half old now and are doing a lot of things. And some early phase funding Don alluded to, and then some modeling capability, which we talked about. But to give you a little bit more detail, oops, I want to go back. We have a group of people that are working together to create a distributed life science community that crosses over the state. We're looking at trying to take the resources that exist already within the different academic sectors and private sectors, get them coordinated and structured in a way that people and institutions know how to enter them and know how to navigate the state to get access to the help that they need. And that would flow in both directions. We would reach out to the entire state and take the resources that are there across the state to build a network. In doing that, we will identify the areas that don't exist. And then we will be coming back next year asking for help to try to establish those kinds of capabilities within the state. This is one of the sub-teams. Excuse me, I'm losing my voice. This is the Biosciences Education Industry Partnership. Been around about a year. I've pulled together U of M, MinSCU, the private colleges, the K-12, different counselors, and also the private sector. And they're a very active organization with several major initiatives that they're working on. To kind of bring my presentation to close here, these are the things that we're looking for when we talk about building a bioeconomy that's healthy and can sustain and over the long haul. First is world-class science, which comes out of our academic and our research as well as our private sector. Second is a world-class talent, getting back to the question again about workforce development. Third is a infrastructure, which means incubation, acceleration, can mean roads, can mean a lot of things. And then fourth is development of our convergence capabilities, because we as a community are undergoing this convergence phenomena that is happening in the industry right now. And then to close, we want to just offer this to you. It's in your packet. We put some time into developing a way to think about the different questions that come to you. It's a matrix. We'd be glad to sit down and talk more about it if you'd like. But it looks at it tries to help you look at how do you, when you look at a specific request, how does it help either areas of target improvement or the various components of a healthy bioeconomy? And the idea is to try to help create some mechanism for framing a given idea or a given decision to look at how well is it actually helping Minnesota. And with that, I will quit and take questions, Mr. Chair.
Any questions of Mr. Wallstrom? Senator Rosen?
Chair, Mr. Wallstrom, can you just explain a little bit farther on your slide on page 7, the Sandia National Lab that you mentioned for the renewable industry?
Yes. Senator Rosen, thank you for the question. This whole issue of renewable fuel and how to create a sustainable economy around renewables, as you all know, it's a very complicated question, and it's very very difficult to get your arms around all of it. So there's a technology called system dynamic modeling. It's a it's an old technology. It's used by companies, government. The federal government uses it a lot to do complex problem solving in areas like nuclear war. As an example, when you detonate a nuclear bomb, it has lots of social implications as well as policy implications as well as whatever. And this modeling capability allows you to look at all the various systems, social as well as scientific systems, that are affected by any one given decision, so that you can identify those and help to create a pathway for policy that is clear and you can follow. I maybe shouldn't have used a nuclear explosion as an example. I use it only because that's what it was. The technology that allowed us to stop doing nuclear testing. They can do it now on computers. It's the same level of complexity that fits into things like a renewable economy, because it touches education, touches policy, it touches citizen education, it touches science. It touches all aspects of it, and it's so we are working with Sandia Labs, who are the leaders in that area for our nation, to develop a model for the state of Minnesota around the renewable fuels. We're doing that in conjunction with the corn growers, ARI, University of Minnesota, MinSCU, all the various constituents that are impacted are part of that process to create an ability to do what-if games, so to speak, not games, it's the wrong message, but to play what if we make this decision, what are the implications to other areas? I'm not sure if that's... in fact, Senator Rosa, one more comment. I read in the paper about the issue that you're all struggling with, which is the issue of our policy. And what this tool would do for us, or will do for us when we're done, is give us the ability to help set a direction to achieve the policy. If we set a policy for 25% renewable by the year 20, for example, or whatever that ends up being, this will help us with a tool to put all the various options into some sort of understandable mode that can give us a probability of success. Okay.
Thank you.
Any questions? Senator Scoy.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. To that point, has the Energy Committee contacted you about running some of their proposals through that scenario that you just referred to?
It's not done. We're working on it. The model, the Sandia, the current timeline for having the first model function is August. Okay. August time frame.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Further questions? Very good. Senator Tomasoni.
Just real quickly, I thought, when I saw this one chart on page 4, that California's was the reason they have so many employees is because of their population. But then I see New York, which has a similar population to California, doesn't have nearly as many. Is it just because of infrastructure and ability to do it, or is it investment from the public and private sector? What's the big reason that California has so many more employees than just say even New York?
Chairman, Senator Tomasoni, California is a very unique place. They have the infrastructure, they have the culture, they have the funding, they have kind of brought it all together. And California and the East Coast are the meccas right now for biotechnology. So their growth is coming from having spent many years preparing their ability. They have absolute growth as is just simply due to job creation. As a percent, you might notice the other slide in terms of the index. Even in that category where you normalize the data, their growth is still really high. But it's a combination of all of the above. It's the educational system is prepared for it, their university, I mean. They have put the infrastructure and policies and everything in place to allow it to happen.
Do they have any, some of these states have, like, tax policies or other incentives that you're aware of? That
and the one?
What could we be doing here as a legislature to obviously enhance this growth? I mean, maybe that's too broad of a, but I mean,
no,
we attract these folks. I guess that's what we're, and that's probably what you're trying to do too.
Yes, thank you, Senator. I don't know all the policies that they have, but I know the one thing that the one policy that is a very has a very positive impact is their approach towards for providing incentives for taking risk on new technology. So there are R&D tax credits there. There are credits towards how do you incent someone to take a risk with their money.
Spend money to make money. We got the tax chairman with us, and we got a,
it's an era.
Investment. We got
Mr. Chairman, please quit giving money away. The Finance Committee needs money.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Bottom.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Wallstrom, it occurs to me when we look at California, their university system is very, very strong. They have the University of California, Berkeley. Stanford is, you know, a leading university in this area, and I suspect that they get the brightest people in that area going to school, and then we all know once you're going to school somewhere, you have a more likely chance of staying. And so it does occur to me that we ought to be working closely with our universities. You know, I don't know what Carleton does in this area. I don't know what, you know, some of the smaller schools do. And for sure, you know, we should be talking to the University of Minnesota about what we can do to help recruit those kinds of students and support those programs.
Thank you. Very good. Senator Rosen?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wallstrom, this is basically, excuse me, just a comment that I remember when we were first on the task force, we were kind of amazed that we really did not have the big picture of what the bioscience scene was in Minnesota. We had not a clue what was out there, and we were still grappling with what is bioscience. Well, it certainly includes agriculture, and it certainly includes the industrial part of it. So what you've done here is an amazing amount of information, gathered the information that we absolutely needed to see what we have and what direction we need to go in. And I think our the relationship between the Mayo and the University of Minnesota is our cornerstone. It's what attracts a lot of attention. We have a lot more out there, as you can see. But I'm very excited about this information. It's exactly what was needed, and I appreciate it.
So we've got the information.
We need the money.
We need the money, and we need the jobs, and we need to bring these companies here. Okay, any further questions of Senator Scheid? How are you doing today?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Very well.
Okay, good. All right, thank you very much. We have one more.
Mr. Chair? One more quick one.
Senator Tomasotti.
Maybe. Is there.
I don't care how I'm doing.
This has got nothing to do with tax policy now, but are there laws that are burden are a burden to developing these bioscience businesses in Minnesota? I mean, can we streamline something here to make it easier for these companies to develop?
I think he's asking the question better than I did. So,
Mr. Jay, Senator, I would I'm not going to be able to cite you specific laws today, but what I can tell you is that this new world that we're moving into from medical device into the convergence zone. There's a lot of policy. There's many laws. There's many things associated with that we're all going to have to deal with. That's exactly why we're doing this Destination 2025 initiative, is so we can systematically walk through them and we can see where they bump into issues. Some of those will be policies, some will be law, some will be finance, some will be technology, some will be infrastructure. But what our goal is to come to be able to come back and provide not only opinion, but give actual case studies of the types of things and the impact they're having, both plus and minus, plus and minus. So I will say this unequivocally: I'm absolutely certain we will run into things. One of them we ran into a couple of years ago when PDL, Protein Design Labs, was trying to expand with one of in this world of biotech, the process of manufacture is really the area of confidentiality you need to protect. But our policies in area of in that case required them to disclose how they were doing their piping for the, and as a result of that, they would have to disclose their core intellectual property in order to get a license, in which case they can't do that. So this is one example, which was taken care of, by the way, I believe that's all been addressed. But we will bump into many of those kinds of things as we go forward. And as we do, we'll bring them forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if there's any impediments or deterrents or anything in the business rules or regulations or anything that would not cost any money or some money, but that we could look at or help, think about that too. I don't know what they would be. Or
we have to do right.
That's one of the things this committee is looking at. Is we're all pro business around here. We want jobs, and we want to make it the state more attractive. So maybe there are some things other than the tax issues that Senator Bach left the room. We get nervous about tax incentives, but let us know what they might be. Or something.
I think, Senator, if when Dr. Mulcahy comes up here, he has probably some things that would make some of those things clearer, too. So,
oh, that's fine. Yeah, that's good.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scheidt.
Mr. Chairman, just about the PDL thing that happened, that company's in the community I represent, and that it just strikes me that sometimes you just don't know where something so important is going to occur because it happened to do, it had to do with an inspection.
Yeah.
Inspecting the piping and the city thinking they could inspect this piping that I think very few people really know what this technical bioscience piping thing, you know, does. I mean, it's not like inspecting the pipes in an ordinary business or house. And so we found out how important that was that that not be public data, for example. But it was this really kind of innocuous issue that had to do with inspection that brought it to our attention. So, but I think we've resolved that one issue. But that's just fascinating that this is how they arise.
Example of things we want to would visit here, if you, sir.
I think it's resolved. I was up here a couple weeks ago, and I know they're planning to expand, so I think they're happy. Thank you very much for doing that. I would like to leave you with this, though, that because this is new for all of us. It's not just new to you. It's new to industry. It's new to academia. As we're working through this, we're going to bump into things that we can't tell you about today. And as we do, we'll bring them forward. It'd be great if we could sit down and in an hour or two or a week make up a list. But I think many of them we're going to bump into. And when we do,
let us know.
Be responsive.
Thank you very much.
Next, we're going to hear from University of Minnesota, Mr. Tim Mulcahy, Vice President of Research. Welcome to the committee, and identify yourself, and you can just proceed as you'd like.
Chair Metz and members of the committee, my name is Tim Mulcahy. I'm the Vice President for Research at the University of Minnesota, and it's a great pleasure for me to have an opportunity to speak with you today. And I would certainly like to personally thank Senator Bonhoeff for her wonderful segue into some of the points I'd like to make in this context regarding the University of Minnesota and its important role in the economy of the state, but particularly in the biosciences and in our technology future. So I would just start right off and describe for you that the University of Minnesota has assets which provide a great economic impact in a number of ways, and it's very hard sometimes to quantify how each of these components actually adds to a number that you can put in front of a committee and say, this is the factor that summarizes the university's contributions. But I think a good way to do it is to look at just some of what those assets are and relate them to what you've heard already from my colleagues who represent the industrial base, the business base of Minnesota. First of all, the university provides great students, highly educated workforce, and it is probably that's recognized as one of the greatest assets that the university provides for our community. We also have and should not overlook the important contribution of alumni who are lifelong contributors to the state, and I have some data to share with you on that front. Faculty at the university are clearly the innovators. They serve as consultants for our companies, and in fact, they are the ones who are leading the convergence drive. They are the ones who are identifying those areas where formerly distinct fields can actually synergize to generate new excitement, new vigor, and new opportunities in the business community. We have unique facilities at the University of Minnesota, and I want you to know that we make those facilities available to companies and others throughout the state where they represent a unique opportunity for companies to do their own research or do quality assurance of their products. Obviously, knowledge dissemination is probably our largest product, if you will, but I would point out that typically we would think of what we do with regard to our students when we talk about education. And what I'd like to share with you today is how knowledge dissemination to our corporate community is also a very, very crucial and vital component of a strong economy. And it is by, as a matter of fact, one of the things that the universities in the state of California do so well, and quite frankly, we do as well here in Minnesota. But I'd like to highlight that as well. Finally, our knowledge creation, which generates new technology, which has commercialization potential. And I'm going to briefly summarize points relative to each one of these different contributions. Let me just say that there are a number of economic comparisons and studies that have been done that have tried to quantify the effect of university research on a state's economy. And I think, I'll be honest with you, these numbers are always fuzzy. And so I'm not putting these up here as absolute figures that I would ask you to quote me as being the source for, but these are figures from the Department of Commerce, and so they really represent some of the best numbers we have available. But typically, for every $1 million of research done at universities across the country, that $1 million is responsible throughout the economy of generating 32 jobs. So if you look at the size of the portfolio at the University of Minnesota, almost $600 million a year in sponsored research that we do at the university, that accounts for approximately 20,000 jobs if you look at all of the ripple effects of the research associated with that funding. Another way to look at this is also to say that there's been studies that not only look at how many jobs, but how much money comes into an economy as a result of research conducted at universities. And although the numbers vary, this is a reasonable estimate. It is not on the high side, nor is it on the low side. I think it's reasonable in the sense that it takes a middle-of-the-road position, but that it's about $1.7 of economic development benefit in a region for every $1 million of sponsored research. So if you do the math for the University of Minnesota's research portfolio, that translates to almost $1 billion of economic benefit. So recognizing that these are estimates, I think they do at least give us an estimate of the magnitude of the potential impact. I'd like to briefly come back to alumni for a moment, and I just put this slide up here for your consideration. And what I'll just tell you is, as a result of a survey the university conducted, the foundation conducted of university alumni, we now know and have a very solid data that suggests that University of Minnesota alumni have formed thousands of companies, they employ hundreds of thousands of people, and they are responsible for billions of dollars of revenue in the state of Minnesota, and nationally another $130 billion can be attributed to the companies that have been formed by alumni of the University of Minnesota. The important point, I think, for this committee to consider is the fact that the university actually represents a talent magnet that brings these great, innovative, industrious people and great students to this region, and it has a lasting impact. 58% of the alumni companies that were founded turned out to be Minnesota companies. And in addition, it turns out that the survey revealed that more than 20% of those company founders actually moved to Minnesota to attend the university and then stayed here and founded 872 of them stayed here to found one or more companies in the state of Minnesota. So the university plays an important role in bringing talent to the region and keeping talent here. Now, I'd like to come back specifically to talk about the university's research role in the technology and innovation development and continuum. First of all, it's important to recognize that what the University of Minnesota represents is the innovation and research end of this very important business development spectrum. And I can tell you now that the actual amount of funding for basic research that's done by companies either at universities or in-house has declined rapidly over the last several years. Companies and businesses are relying more heavily than ever on universities to do the innovation, the basic research that ultimately benefits their evolution and product development. So the University of Minnesota plays a critical role in this particular process. I'd also point out, referring again just back to the reference to California, that this is another one of the great reasons because the state of California does have a large number of very successful research universities. I think it's important for this to remind this committee, although I'm sure I don't need to, that the University of Minnesota is the only research university in the state of Minnesota, and we account for 98% of all of the sponsored research that's conducted in the state of Minnesota. So it is a very, very important element in this whole spectrum. The thing I'd like to share with you today is rather than talk about the great discovery and research that goes on at the university, because of the interest of this committee in businesses and business development and jobs, I'd like to talk a little bit about the interface between the university's innovation economy and the translation to our business partners that we actually need in order to create jobs, create new products, and enhance quality of life. So I'm going to talk to you about commercialization efforts at the university, some new efforts to enhance the university as a resource for our business community, and also new approaches the university is taking to encourage even stronger connections with the research environment. So let me briefly talk to you about our commercialization of technology. We're proud to point out that independent studies conducted over the last couple of years have ranked the intellectual property pipeline resident at the University of Minnesota among the tops in the country. In the last 2 years, we've ranked fourth, and that includes places like Wisconsin, Stanford, and other universities which rank lower than the university in terms of the potential of its intellectual property pipeline. So the resource is rich. What we need to do is figure out a better way to translate that potential to reality in terms of benefit. So one of the things that we've been doing at the university to enhance our commercialization opportunities to drive technology into the economy is four various approaches here. First of all, we've hired very talented and skilled technology liaisons to work with faculty to help them identify when they have innovation that has this kind of potential and to drive it through the process, to serve as guides, to hold people's hands, to make them understand how important it is to do this. We've also established an IP commitment committee inside the university, which advises me on what types of technologies to invest in from the university's patent perspective and how to develop appropriate marketing strategies to do that. One of the points I'd like to make to you is that the university is changing its usual approach in this regard in that we are relying far more heavily on external advisors. And one of the things about this region of the state in particular is we have tremendously talented and experienced people in the venture and tech transfer arena who've volunteered their help to help the university be more successful in this regard. We've also provided internal funds to help identify technologies that need a little bit more support to advance them to the point that they would be more attractive to outside venture funding. And in some cases, we even provide support to spin out companies from the university in the form of small business loans to get them up and going so that they can have the opportunity to nurture. I'd like to then just transition briefly to startups, and startups out of a university are really ideal opportunities when you have transformative technologies. Technologies which are slight improvements or advancements on existing technologies really are not appropriate for starting new companies. But what's good about a university like the University of Minnesota is what we really do every day is work on transformative innovation. So we have a fertile ground for which to develop transformative technologies. One of the things we realized we needed to do was be more business-like, more proactive, and more disciplined in our identification, selection, guidance, and nurturing of potential spin-offs to give them the greatest probability of success when they exit the university. So we've created a venture center. I'm not going to walk through this slide for you here, but what we're really doing is looking at about 100 opportunities a year on a continuing basis from within the university based on our research. And we have a target now of identifying and launching 5 startups or spin-off companies annually. A long-term expectation would be that 2 of those will persist for a long period of time. 1, hopefully, would be a big winner. But we're continuing to feed this process, so this is an ongoing scheme. We've got tremendous support from the community for this, and their very positive reaction. Let me just go back one slide. I got a little eager. So let me just point out there are key economic advantages to university-based startups versus other kinds of startups. And the 2 that I'd like to highlight for this committee is the statistics have shown that startups that arise from university-based technologies have a higher success rate than startups that are generated from other sources of technology. So the university startups have a leg up, more or less, and part of it is because of the type of work that comes out of the university and the kind of oversight that the university exercises in helping launch the best opportunities. And finally, there's very strong evidence that in the long run, these startups spin-offs from the universities result in job creation, which I know is an interest of this committee. I'd also like to point out that the university this summer opened a new function. It's the Academic and Corporate Relations Center. And the primary focus and intent of this new initiative is to provide a easier access for the outside business community to the vast resources that we have inside the university. We conducted a survey of 30 companies across the state of Minnesota and basically, among other things, asked them what are the most important assets at the university from the perspective of your company and what are the biggest issues you have about working with the university? What are we doing well and what do we need to do better? This map just gives you a distribution of where those companies were located, and you can see their different size and different complexity. What they responded back, I think, tells you and others, and us as well, what these companies value about the university. And you can see across the board, they recognize the importance of our undergraduates as the talented workforce, our graduate students as professional workforce, continuing education for their work staff, professional development, consortia and centers that we run where we're continuing to transfer our knowledge and information that benefits companies and their staff, consulting with our professors to get the expertise they need, an opportunity to sponsor research at the university, and finally, the thing that most people think about when they think about university as an economic driver, they're interested in our intellectual property. I would posit to the committee that really what the university is valued for is its intellectual capital far more than its intellectual property. And I think as a university, we have to emphasize that, and that needs to be recognized. So what did we do? Well, we opened up the Academic and Corporate Relations Center to provide a front door for companies. The center has 4 new relationship managers that are organized by specialty and sector. We've established direct relationship with corporate partners. These relationship managers have accounts, if you will, of various companies. They visit these companies on a routine basis. We field queries and issues from the companies on a daily basis. It's a very active outreach program. It's a two-way street. We've got great dialogue with companies across the state now. We've been able to also integrate the very complex and numerous internal relationships that exist within the university. And in the past, these have perplexed the outside world as they tried to gain entrance to the university. They've been confused. How do I get where I need to go? We've helped do that and done it in a very highly responsive time frame. I won't go into this next slide, but this is the kind of services that the ACRC offers. But let me say that the reaction from the corporate community has been loud and clear, that they think this is an outstanding advance for the university, something they've been wanting to see for a very, very long time. We have some contact information here, and one of the reasons I put this up here is we've also been sensitive to issues with outstate Minnesota. We have toll-free numbers so people can reach us. We have a web address where people can reach us, and we're really available on a 24/7 basis through technology. Right now, our relationship managers serve only companies in the state of Minnesota or who are headquartered in the state of Minnesota. And you can see the array of companies, government agencies, and associations that we have formal relationships at this point in time. One of the most important advances is we've posted a website specific for business, and I can tell you it is the first business-specific website ever posted at the University of Minnesota. And we think this is a very big advance, and again, it's being utilized very heavily. So we think it's a great thing. Finally, let me kind of wrap things up a little bit by talking about how we are as a partner when it comes to establishing research partnerships. Nationally, if you were to talk to the corporate world, they would tell you that working with universities is essential to their vitality and to the competitiveness of the United States, but universities tend to be extremely difficult to work with, and we typically get hung up on intellectual property issues, which really bog the system down to the point that companies look for other opportunities. And as my colleague Dale Wallstrom mentioned to you, there are universities outside of the United States who recognize this as a chink in the armor and are doing everything in their power to exploit this problem that is resident between universities and U.S. industry. I'm happy to say that the University of Minnesota recognizes this as a very important impediment to progress and partnership, and we have joined what is known now nationally as the University Industry Demonstration Partnership, which really is a consortium of universities and major industries looking to find much more a collaborative and effective ways of working together, and we have taken this to heart at the University of Minnesota. And if you were to check with some of our corporate sponsors, our partners, I think they would tell you that they are extremely pleased with the move and attitude change that we've been put in place at the university, which facilitates their ability to do research with us.
Just a point here for everyone, if you would now turn to your black and white pages.
Thank you very much. We had a printer problem and didn't realize it until we were partway here. The color slide portion of your handout stopped at that last slide. Many of you may wish my presentation stopped at that last slide. While I'm here, I think I'll press on if I can. So let me just tell you some of the partnership principles that are emerging at the university in this regard. We are working in what I refer to as a collaborative innovation mode, which means we are looking to put higher value on the long-term partnership with companies and less emphasis on transactional intervention or interactions. We're far more responsive, and we've internally coordinated our systems much better so that we are perceived by our partners as being more interested in their success than we have been in the past. Another thing that we do in the line of dissemination that represents a very, very important aspect, a benefit to business, is we have numerous university industry consortia, which serve as a great place for an interface between the corporate world and the research that we do, within the university. This is one very prime example, pardon the pun. But iPrime is recognized nationally as an incredibly successful industry-university partnership, which has rich benefits, particularly in this state, but we have other companies outside of the state of Minnesota who also participate. I won't read this slide to you, but there are mutual benefits for the company and mutual benefits for our faculty and students, and we are looking to do more of this in a very positive way.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you. I just want to ask a question, though, on that particular point. Is that a company that's a startup from the university, or are some of these partnerships with non-university-related companies?
Madam Chair, Senator Scheid, that's an excellent question. We have upwards of 60 companies participating in these various consortia, and they range in scale from new startups that come out of the university all the way to major industries here in the state of Minnesota and nationally. This is a very, very productive interaction, and it's one that we're very proud of, but I think it represents, again, a slightly different example of knowledge dissemination than we typically think of when we think of the university.
I wonder,
Senator Scheid.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Wallstrom, if you could maybe give me an idea of some of the government agencies that you're working with.
Well, some of the biggest government agencies in these particular arenas are the National Science Foundation. This kind of approach is very, very large for them. But the Department of Energy is another. Many of the federal agencies, USDA, they all have this kind of interest in seeing this kind of translation, if you will. And I would say this activity that I just highlighted harkens back to the actual founding principles of the land-grant university, which is we're here to help those in our community do their jobs better based on the advancement of our technology.
Okay. Thank you.
Madam Chair. Thank you. I don't mean to interrupt either, but are these partnerships partnerships that are happening while the research is going on? So are the businesses actually are they a paying partner in the research, so that when it comes out of the university, they actually have a vested interest in it?
Senator Murphy, I'm trying to read over the nameplates. I'm sorry. Tomasini. I'm sorry. Let me. That's an excellent question. Many of the partners who participate in these consortia are sponsoring other research at the university, but this is a pay membership to participate here. There are benefits to the company that they value enough that they pay a membership fee to participate. What frequently happens is it provides an opportunity for the professional staff of a company to come and work side by side with faculty in the university laboratories, and provides the opposite opportunity for students and faculty to actually interact in a real world industrial setting in their situation. So there is a free exchange of information across the board. There are no specific quid pro quo in terms of unique advantages to being in, other than the fact that you're always aware of what's going on because you're part of the ongoing event. So companies know what we're doing, but it also gives us a competitive advantage by helping us understand what it is they need. So it's a great opportunity, one that the federal government is really, really has pushed very hard on universities doing, and I would add the University of Minnesota does it extremely well.
Thank you. And Senator Skoy?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as a land-grant university, everything is required to be public data pretty much. Do you run into situations where publishing the information is a problem for your private partner?
Senator, members of the committee, that's an excellent question, and one of the most important academic principles at the university is that the work we do must be public. However, all policies at major research all major research universities have policies which recognize and respect the necessity for proprietary opportunities for companies that are going to take the work and develop it. So our policies will allow a limited period of time in which companies will have the opportunity to file patents, or the university will file patents on the technology to protect the technology and then we make the technology public in our usual format. So it can be a challenge, and I would say for a university that isn't as well grounded in its foundational elements, there may be a problem. But at the University of Minnesota, that's not been an issue that's caused us any heartache.
And Senator Olson-Skloe.
And Madam Chair, do you have any idea how long that time can be?
Typically, our policy says 30 to 60 days, and there are times when, you know, we would take an exception to 90 days. But anything beyond that would have to be an exceptional approval that goes through an approval process involving faculty governance as well as in administrative review. But in general, at universities across the country, it's typically 60 days or fewer.
Thank you.
And Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Mulcahy. You speak about the partnerships and the university-based startups. Do you have relationships with companies where there's a revenue sharing for the university?
Senator Bonhoff, I'm not sure I
follow. So if you have a partnership with a business entity, is there any kind of revenue sharing on the business side? Do you receive any of their profits go back to the university? Is there an investment back or not?
Madam Chair, Senator Bonhoff, members of the committee, our relationships of that nature take the form of traditional licensing arrangements in which, in order to access the university's technology, companies agree to standard terms with regard to licensing fees, royalty generation. So we benefit from that kind of arrangement, but not the company per se. If that product does well, then the license fees and royalties will do well and come back to the university. But if the company does well in another area unrelated to the technology we've associated with them, we would not see that direct benefit.
Thank you.
I hope that answers
your question.
Yes,
it does. Thank you.
Would you like to continue?
Thank you very much. So we've reached the point that I hope that I've made a strong case that the university really represents an important element of this partnership that's going to be vital to the state's future. So I'd just like to take the opportunity to say, what can we do to help do that? What do we need to succeed as a university? And knowing that the legislative session's coming up and a lot of these issues will be before your various committees, I'd like to take the opportunity to mention a few of them. This is a reproduction of an editorial that occurred in the Star Tribune not long ago, and basically what it's advocating for is the need for the state of Minnesota to really invest in the university as an important part of its bioscience future, and I won't read that further, but it sets up, in my mind, the next slide, because I've been asked this many times. Well, what are we up against? Why is it important that Minnesota have these opportunities? And I just summarized for you the top five public research universities and some of the recent capital investments that have been reported on those campuses within the last couple of years. As to give you an estimate or a size of the scope of the problem that we're confronting, in order for the University of Minnesota and therefore the state of Minnesota to remain competitive, we need to be able to compete on an equitable footing with our peer institutions. And right now, a lot of investment nationally is going into state-of-the-art facilities and new capacity. And so the bio-bonding authority that will become before the legislature is an attempt to address that in a way which will allow the university to plan long-term, because to fill any of these buildings years down the road, you need to know and have some assurance that there is a long-term plan so that you can plan appropriately for that future. Finally, nearing the end of my slides here. So in addition to state-of-the-art facilities, another thing that's critically vital is adequate support to provide competitive salary for faculty. And the University of Minnesota falls well below the average of our peer institutions with regard to faculty salary. We also need support for fellows and students to get the best and the brightest here. And I can tell you, as a newcomer to Minnesota myself, I think once you get people here, they're going to be hard-pressed to leave. We want to get the best and brightest here, and this is a valuable help there. And finally, programmatic support for the various research initiatives that the university has identified in partnership with many of our corporate partners that we believe will best promote Minnesota's future. I would come back to point two, the faculty salary, just briefly, and there's been discussion already about renewable energy in the biofuel situation. I can tell you the University of Minnesota and the state of Minnesota are very competitive in that space. However, every state in the union is pushing hard on this front, and they're looking for the intellectual resources to be competitive. And if they can come into the University of Minnesota and pick off our best and brightest because they can offer them a better compensation package, then our competitive edge is lost. And so we just need to think, not only do you need to look at salaries as a static issue, we need to look at salaries as a dynamic issue as in the context of pressures that are taking place at the national level. And after the president's speech last night, I can tell you if a state wasn't thinking about doing this, they are now. So finally, we need your continued support. And with that, I would draw things to a close and say very sincerely, thanks for everything you do for the university and for this opportunity to meet with you today.
Thank you, Dr. Mulcahy. You know, on that point about energy, the university had a symposium last December that was offered by the IREE program, the Initiative for Energy and the Environment. It was absolutely fascinating to hear what we're doing here in Minnesota and what you just spoke about in terms of having these incredibly talented people here. And I believe Dr. Brunix spoke on Monday night and talked about that some of the proposals before us talk about enhanced investment in research, do not address faculty salaries. Could you just go into that a little bit just to reinforce? Because I think if we have incredible facilities here, but we don't have top-notch people in them, then they're not as effective. Would you agree with
that? Madam
Chair
and members of the committee, I'd be delighted to take that opportunity. What I think the president was referring to is that the budget that the university put forward for consideration by the state really had two essential components. One, I think simply to summarize, really establishes and maintains and strengthens the base, the critical foundation of the university, faculty salaries, et cetera, et cetera. The second part of that was actually funding for research initiatives that were designed and aligned to advance Minnesota's future in the biosciences and in other areas of technology. The governor's budget that he proposed for the university did include funding for many, if not most, of those research initiatives. But what was lacking was funding for the core foundational elements that are so essential to the university, and large among those was the opportunity for salary to keep our faculty salary competitive. So you're absolutely right. We've got that potential now, but we have to maintain it by keeping those people here. And the pressure for them to go is going to skyrocket in this particular one area of biofuels, given what's happening nationally.
Thank you. And Senator Skoy, did you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And on the risk of other people dipping into our talent pool, it's not just other states, it's other countries.
Absolutely.
And China is building a huge number of higher ed institutions, and from I think I've heard they're already have been recruiting at the University of Minnesota to fill those positions. Mm.
Senator, that is correct, and I'd also point out a couple of very important things that I think reflect well on Minnesota and actually represent an important advantage. One is that the University of Minnesota has the largest alumni group in China of any university in the country. The university has established very strong ties with China for a long period of time, from the earliest days in which it was possible to have diplomatic and economic affiliations with China. We in the biofuels area have established strong collaborative arrangements with many universities in China who also have a biofuels renewable energy focus. It's essential to them as well. So we have good exchange there, which again represents another positive for the University of Minnesota in this particular space. However, you're absolutely right. The drain on universities across the country to China is phenomenal.
Any other questions?
Well, Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Scheid.
Madam Chair, I don't know how many members of this committee are on the Capital Investment Committee, but we just had Dr. Sarah and Mr. Fitzenreiter speak to us. So is it Dr. Mulcahy?
Yes, it is.
Dr. Mulcahy.
But you can call me whatever you like.
Well, I think I called you Mr. Wallstrom before, so I want to apologize for that. I apologize to both of you, and what can I say?
Actually, you offended Dale.
I'm so sorry. I'm sorry. Anyway, but you should get credit for, reinforcing, I think, what we were talking about, because I think Senator Langseth indicated he certainly intends to bring that forward this year. The bioscience facility, part of the facilities in any case. And so members would do well to translate what we're getting here into when we see that that legislation come before us too. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Are there other questions? Well, thank you so much for being here. I think we're all impressed with the three presentations today because they truly reflect how we are being very progressive. There's some very great work going on in this area. It's just our opportunity
Absolutely.
To hear it and how we use it, because I think we all represent many different communities and different areas.